for a really great future.
We're talking real money.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Maybe I found some little digital things I can make flash around the screen. Happy New Year, everybody. This is, at least for me, the beginning of the year when we get rid of summer and we get back to real work. Even though this is a short week. Because, well, we usually, Tom and I usually do two podcasts together. One podcast, one video cast, and podcast. This week we're only doing the one combo cast, which is this that you're seeing right now. Because it was a day shortened week. I couldn't get my audio from the radio station in Seattle because, of course, everybody takes Labor Day off.
Ah.
Well, not everybody, because I went to the store. Somebody was still laboring.
Good call.
Summer. I am not a fan of summer. Maybe it's because I live in Florida.
Yeah, no, I mean, summer here.
I live in Florida. It's like you hear people up north go, I hate winter. You know, Minnesotans. I hate winter. I just don't like it. I don't like summer. Probably because where I live. Anyway, that said, Happy New Year.
Moving right along into fall, apparently.
Welcome
or the new
talking.
Year. Yeah.
It's
okay.
Almost fall.
Okay.
Welcome to Talking Real Money, the podcast, the audio cast, the video cast, the all kinds of cast. I am in Florida. This is Florida. It doesn't look like Florida because it's a room. I am Don McDonald, just hanging out here, happy as can be, talking to my good friend, Thomas Charles Koch, who is in his little aircraft chamber in Maltby, Washington State, where, of course, the weather is lovely for about a day.
No, it's going to be not. I don't think there's even rain on the horizon for like 2 weeks.
Ooh.
Now you make me check.
Then 9 months. It's like,
well, yeah, there's that.
Oh,
no, nope, still no rain in the forecast at all.
The groundhog saw his shadow, so it's nine more months of rain.
We did have a very bad June, so we made up for it in July, August, and so far in September. So,
well, there you go. That's their happy season.
Yeah.
We are here to talk about money. We're going to talk about something a little bit unique today. It's a trip back in time that has lessons for the future. There are several of you still alive, who listened to my show on Business Radio Network back in the 1980s and early 1990s.
I'm one of them. I used to listen.
You actually programmed it.
And I was on it once.
You were on it once.
I was. Yes.
Didn't want to be, but he was on it.
Well, that's true.
He was grumbling about it. I'm not going to go on the... Anyway, back then, you know, I'd been a stockbroker, so I was indoctrinated into this concept that, by the way, at the time was nearly universal, that great money managers could make you better money if you had just a brilliant mind. It was the Peter Lynch syndrome. Peter Lynch from Fidelity Magellan Fund, who back in the day was the best stock picker in the world until he wasn't anymore. Well, actually, he was really smart. He got out right as his prowess begin to decline, and he knew why. He got lucky, and as he got more and more money in the fund, he knew he was going to get less lucky in the future. So it's like, man, get out while you're
ahead. And the asset class that he owned had a great run. It didn't have such a great run after he left either, by the way.
Again, lucky.
Yeah, right.
So during that day, a lot of us, I include myself in this group, looked for the next hot money manager. I did this on my show. You listened in. And I also, a lot of my advice, a lot of my research, not advice really, the research I got came from people like Morningstar, Standard & Poor's, others. I read Forbes, I read Fortune, I read Money. I was reading about all these hot funds. I was looking, doing all my research, making sure that they looked like what they said they were and that they had great track records. Remember, it was all about the track record. Past performance is not indicative of future results. And there was a guy who started in 1988 with Morningstar named John Reckenthaler. John is a very respected mutual fund analyst, and he published a lot of great information about what he calls boutique funds. What is a boutique fund, Tom?
Well, boutique means small, means sophisticated, and generally fashionable. I mean, if you just the definition of the word boutique.
Turn your volume up just a little. You're a little quiet.
The definition of boutique is small.
Yeah.
Quiet, apparently. Sophisticated and fashionable.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of new and cool and exciting. And in that group, back in that period, late 80s, early 90s, were funds like Janus 20.
Sure.
20th Century Growth and Heritage. Now American Century. Kaufman Fund. PBHG. And many, many, many others. And we talked about them. I suggested them to you because they had been hot. Now, had I known what I know now about indexing and massive diversification, the research wasn't there then. But the research is here now. And had I known that, I would have been boring like we are today. With no hot funds. We have no hot funds to give you. No big ideas, but everybody wanted big ideas. So we all provided them. And recently, John Reckenthaler, not recently, it was about a year ago, I was just doing some research on PBHG to see what happened to them. Oh, hey, there's a good aside. Do you know what happened to them?
No.
It was Pilgrim Baxter somebody and somebody, a little tiny fund that became really big out of middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. Well, it turns out, and I apparently was out of the fund by this point, turns out that Pilgrim and Baxter were allowing people to use their funds to front run.
Oh, goodness.
To trade ahead of the crowd.
Sure.
And the New York Attorney General found out about this, and the SEC then found out about this, and they pretty much shut them down. They got a big settlement against them for $160 million. And that was basically the end of that fund. Others just, you know, and it was merged into another kind of fund with another company. There were several others for which that happened. But I wanted to do some more research on what happened to all these funds. And I came across this article written by John Reckenthaler at Morningstar. And I'm going to put my glasses on for this part because I can't see. His first line in this article, the article is called Reasons Not to Invest in Boutique Funds.
Which I think anybody can go read, right, at Morningstar?
It's at Morningstar. Yeah, oh, okay. It's from 2021.
I thought so.
And the first paragraph is, or the subtitle is, Fool Me Once. Me too. Fool me once. He said, I was once a disciple of new ways, fresh ideas that could put your assets to work in a better way. He said, when I was asked by journalists to recommend funds, I typically selected boutique funds. Everybody knew about Fidelity and American funds, but he looked at American Heritage. He liked that. Kaufman, PBHG Growth, Bruce Fund, the Hennessy Focus. I remember all of these.
Sure.
And he said that they all, after a period of great performance, collapsed as the markets changed. They continued to do what they were doing, but the markets no longer favored the things that they were doing, which is the heart of our argument for diversification, because you will never know what is going to be hot and what is not. And that brings us to today. Tom, there is a lesson for today's investors that is as powerful now as it was then.
Well, and he correctly points out that boutiques frequently crash because of poor risk controls and because, as you say, things go in style and things go out of style. Not unlike a boutique clothing place, right, where something was really great. You know, a particular clothing item that everybody had to have, and then not so much, right? So it goes out of favor. And
like Forever 21.
Forever
21. My daughter used to go to Forever 21 for forever, and then she stopped completely. Yeah. And my mother would go to Forever 21 because, or her mother would go to Forever 21 when they were having, because they were doing a bankruptcy sale. And so they like have everything for like $2. And her mother's buying all this stuff to give to our daughter. And our daughter goes, oh, I don't like that stuff anymore.
That was 10 years ago.
$2. I don't like it.
Not interested.
Ooh,
I heard that.
Thor is flinging things our way.
I was wondering what that was.
Bang, bang, Thor's silver hammer.
I hope it's not Kathy Woods because we're getting ready to talk about her again.
Kathy, we're sorry.
She's knocking on the door. You know, because the ARC funds seem to me to be the poster child of exactly this. They were small. They were fashionable. They were sophisticated because this is something, you know, sort of innovation is sophisticated. This is somebody who can see into the future and is going to show you how to do it. And they started out with big returns, money rushed in, not unlike some of these other ones that Mr. Reckenthaler talks about here, the Infinity Q Fund, I mean, among others, that were, this is exactly what has happened. This has been the traditional thing that does happen with mutual funds. They do get hot. A lot of money, not always, rushes in. And then guess what happens? It rushes out. And here's the thing about boutique funds, though, besides that problem, which I think is a huge one. Generally, if you buy these, and people still do today for a variety of reasons, you end up with a series of ideas, not a portfolio. And this is something you coined this phrase, Don, that people use all the time when they call us. They end up with a case of hodgepodge-itis, where they have a little bit of this, and I tried some of this, and I got into energy then, and healthcare looked good. I got to rush into that. They end up with a lot of these things, but it has no core. It has no discipline, and it's just a series of things that look good at the moment. You end up chasing managers. You end up chasing trendy investments, and here's the other part that's painful that Reckenthaler does mention. You end up sometimes with money going up, but for the most part, big, huge swings going down because as things go out of favor, they go out of favor fast and your returns go down very quickly. So this is not investing. This truly is speculative. I'm sorry that you got caught up in it when you were on the former business radio network.
I was like everybody else. I was looking for the next hot thing. There's the punctuation
wow,
again.
That's
I don't know if that
loud.
Frequency actually comes across the microphone.
I can hear it in my headphones.
Wow. And it is loud here in Florida right now. Let me just look at the radar and make sure I don't have to go to the basement.
Yeah, me want to run for the hills and I'm 3,000 miles away.
We don't actually have a basement because we live in Florida.
No such thing. But,
oh, wow. That just popped up right over our house practically. Wasn't that interesting? Anyway, there was another, though, in this article, you mentioned that Infinity Q story.
Yeah, right.
This is a great example of and why you need to avoid what seems to be hot. The argument we often get from listeners is, well, I mean, they've got all these new things in there. They've got all these great new ideas. I want to participate in these. What could go wrong? They're doing it. What could go wrong? Infinity Q is a great example of what could go wrong because in their portfolio, they had various types of assets. From equities to alternative investments. You hear a lot of talk, a lot of excitement around alternative
today.
Investments, don't you?
Today. Oh, big. Because stocks and bonds don't make money. I got to put my money in those.
So what could possibly go wrong with those? You look at your mutual fund that has alternatives and they say, we're worth a lot of money. Well, here's what happened with Infinity Q. Infinity Q had what are called level 3 assets. Which are lightly traded. It's difficult to determine the price. They're illiquid, they're lightly traded, and they priced them at a price that was dramatically higher than they were actually worth when they hit the market. And they immediately, after selling these crappy assets, found that their total value, their fund went from $1.73 billion one day to $1.25 billion the next.
That's a decrease of somewhere around 30%.
28%.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Because of their overvaluing assets. So it's
which is
hard.
Another, I think actually you raise a very good point in today's environment. Because as I mentioned, people are rushing into alt. I get invited to some alt conference, alternative investing conference, basically every day. Mm-hmm. There's one here. There's one in San Francisco. There's one in Los Angeles. Well, I haven't been, having been to California recently, don't need to go back. And I don't need to learn more about alternative investing because I'm worried that it's exactly this, whether it's loan programs, whether it, whatever it's investing in, right? And when we had had one come up last week on the show. So again, this is trendy, and I hope it's a trend that goes away as quickly as the Infinity Q fund did.
This is why I've been so reticent to fall for the alternative. And we get pitched this a lot. As a matter of fact, some of the firms that we admire out there, that we used to admire more, have gotten into these alternative investments because the sales pitch is so good. You know, these are proven to offset such and such and so and so. But some of these funds, for example, as Tom mentioned, lending funds that lend to consumers.
Your money.
And they claim that their high returns are safe because of the diversification of their portfolios. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal today, Wednesday, that said that consumer loans are weakening and there could be some serious defaults on some of these funds. And suddenly your safe money is gone, or a lot of it. This is why we try to keep you away from these things that nobody really understands, and too many people lie about. They just lie. And either they're too stupid to know.
And they're making big money on your money. That's the other part. Huge, the expenses on these things. So, yeah, this is fascinating that you get to look back 30 years and say, this is what I did then, but I'm smarter today. This is what I believe today. And that John Reckenthaler gets to say the same thing, who's a guy that's very well known in the industry, very well respected. And he can basically say, I've learned from my mistakes over time. Don't follow that example.
That's the trick. Learn from what you did in the past and don't do it again. You can't go back and change it. My wife drives me crazy with this sometimes. Oh, I wish I hadn't done. And I go, but you did.
It's over.
It's done. You can't do anything about that. Don't do it again. There. Fixed. That's all you can do.
I never tell my wife, don't do it again, but I'll leave that. That's in your house, so I'll let that one go there. Are you ready? nice look. All right, so you ready for a couple of questions?
No, I don't want to do it anymore.
That's it. Time's up.
I'm done.
He's out.
I'm done with you.
For that reason, it's out.
Yeah, sure. What do you got?
All right, here we go.
Tom really likes being the question reader.
It's so just every once in a while, yeah. This one comes from Karen, who writes us, is VOO, and VOO is, I always forget that ticker.
That's the S&P 500 ETF.
That's right. And RPV.
RPV.
I think that's a value fund.
Oh, no. That is a large cap, I think. Oh, it's the S&P 500 value ETF. Yes.
Okay. The question is, are they different enough that a wash sale wouldn't apply? First of all, what is a wash sale?
Wash sale is when you sell a security to take a tax loss. So you sell the S&P 500 ETF because it's down in value. You get to realize a taxable loss that you can use against income and future capital gains, $3,000 in income. But you can't buy a substantially equal security for 30.
Just go buy the S&P again.
You can't buy it even from somebody else. You
Got
couldn't
it.
Go to like to buy. You couldn't go buy the SPDR, the Spider, which is almost identical. It's practically identical. It's going to be too close to identical. You're going to get in trouble with the IRS. They're going to disallow the loss. However,
and so in this case, it's okay, is what you're saying.
I am not the IRS. I am not speaking on behalf of the IRS. I am not an accountant, but I do know that this is quite different in that it excludes most of the growth portion of the S&P 500, so it is a different investment.
And she also asked about VOO and AVUS.
AVUS is a very different investment in that the AVUS is pretty much the entire U.S. market.
Correct.
And if I had to choose between the two, I would just sell my VOO and buy the AVUS and then never go back to VOO.
Because you're going a wider... Yeah. More diversified portfolio anyway.
I have 2,300 stocks in the AVUS.
No, is it really 2,300? Okay.
Yeah. Wow. It's a little lower than I would have thought.
Yeah, I would have thought it'd be, but they'd probably clip at both ends. Who knows? So,
yeah,
okay, that's a good, great question. We got one more from Sean, who writes us from Chesapeake.
Chesapeake?
Chesapeake?
You mean Chesapeake?
Chesapeake. Okay. Thank you for that.
Short a syllable, but that's
Chesapeake. Okay. He says, hello. I finally switched brokerage accounts, Ed Jones, to Fidelity after a year. Educated myself through listening to great people like you who just want to help others make the right moves for their situation. Thank you for that compliment. We really appreciate it. Moved an IRA of $230,000 and a Roth of $211,000. I was in multiple mutual funds with my advisor, Ed Jones, with front load funds and high expense ratios. Of course, I was never told the cost of purchasing these funds. I was so angry after finding out these unbelievable fees. I knew I had to get educated on how to manage my future retirement myself. Good for you. That's saying something, actually, to say, hey, I'm going to stand up here for myself. But the question at hand is, searching now, what is the best way to move out of these funds, which include, he went through all the funds. And you know, it's what you just referred to. Doesn't matter what you already did. It's matter what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And if you're in an IRA and a Roth, you can do anything you like. You don't have to own any of the funds you used to own at Ed Jones. You can sell them all. No tax consequence. So here's my answer, and you can give me yours, Don, too. So,
you're asking and answering. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to do both because I think it's pretty simple, actually.
I'll just take a nap.
I'm a steal from you. This is the matter of how hard you want to work. Uh-huh. We at our website, talkingrealmoney.com, give you three mutual funds you could own at Fidelity where you could build a pretty widely diversified, low-cost portfolio of stocks and bonds. Pretty good, too, that you could own in both the IRA and the Roth, for that matter. Or if you want to work harder, our friend Paul Merriman has a 10-fund Fidelity portfolio at his website, paulmerriman.com. That's how I think you should look at it. But Don, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was napping. excuse me.
Remember, you already did what you did. So it's time to move on.
I did what I did. So that's done. I've done what I've done and I won't do it no more. Yeah. What you said.
Okay. Finally. This is the first time in 30 years.
I don't have much to add to that. That's pretty much what I mean. In fact, I'm right here on the page, three funds at three groups. So I had it already pulled up.
And you could take those three Fidelity funds and find the exchange traded fund equivalent and do it that way if you'd prefer to use ETFs.
Absolutely.
It's the same thing.
Absolutely. Although we do give you an ETF portfolio that looks a little better than Fidelity's ETF portfolio on that same page using iShares funds, which are less expensive.
So you could go on iShares at your Fidelity, which would still be, you could still purchase at no cost and the expense ratios are very low.
Basically, the article was originally three funds at three groups. Now it's three funds at three groups plus three ETFs.
And you're adding that to you. Added something to the conversation. Didn't expect to. I thought you might be washed away in the latest Florida thunderstorm, but there you are. So well done, sir.
Hey, we're up on the mountain here. We're
40
in the
feet above sea level.
We're on the high ground. No, we're a whopping 100 feet above sea level.
Oh, pardon me.
It would take one heck of a rogue wave to take us out.
But if you ever step back and look at the big picture and kind of what Florida is and then look at the two oceans and everything, it kind of looks up quickly.
I'm not worried a bit because I'll be dead by then.
That's a good point. So global warming will not take
I'm more
you
worried
down.
About climate the change, being dead pardon. By then part than the climate change part.
I know. I hear you, brother. So anyway.
I have four children. I'm leaving it to them to deal with it.
That's probably not the best thing you've ever said.
I don't care
anymore. Okay, all right. So
I'm too old to care.
You're honest.
I'm grumpy.
You're grumpy. You're curmudgeon.
I'm curmudgeonly.
You're the only guy I know who hates summer.
I hate summer.
And the only guy I know who says September 6th is a new year. So those are.
I think it should be the new year. It's a much more pleasant new year. It's not like blizzards.
That's true.
It's safer to celebrate it.
But
if I get drunk, you're not going to die on ice.
It's for us. It's the beginning of the rain and the dark.
Hey,
so anyway, there you go.
Do you have anything other than your class?
Don't do your class. Yes, I do. I've talked to a lot of you this week. It's been fascinating because I did a lot of people like you look at kind of September as if summer was there.
Life
it's over,
gets
I
back to around. Normal.
Yeah. And so I've called, a lot of people called. I love it. I just talked to a guy. He's 81 and he has about 100,000 and he wants to clean up his portfolio. I said, sell this, buy this. I'll do that. You don't have to have $2 million to talk to me, and it doesn't have to be at whatever situation.
And we're not asking for you to become a client.
No, I really enjoy
it. We'd love it if you did, but we're not like the guy from Chesapeake. You didn't hear us go, oh, well, you should come to us. That's what 99.999% of the people who have financial talk shows would have said.
That's
oh,
a good
go
point.
To our firm. Give us a call. Give us a call at the office. And
give us a call on Monday. Yeah.
Well, we tell you to give us a call, but you're going to just get advice.
Yeah. So anyway,
free.
Give me a ring or set up an appointment at vestry.com. Love to help. And yes, I'm still taking, I think right now I only have one Saturday appointment this Saturday. So I still have one opening. It'll be early too, by the way, because I've got to take my brother, believe it or not, to the airport and be at the airport at 0530 hours on Saturday morning. Who else would be happy about that?
You.
Me.
You're,
yeah,
you.
That yeah, doesn't bother me in the least.
It's good. You kind of live on East Coast time.
Indeed I do. So anyway. There you go.
Is there something else I wanted to add? No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I'll put this little thing together. I'll have a Q&A session for you on Friday again. Tom and I will be back together on Saturday doing our live show on Northwest News Radio in Seattle, which you are certainly are invited to listen to. You can also call us with questions at 855-935-TALK 24/7. Or you can send them in at talkingrealmoney.com, your one-stop source for everything you need to know about money. Pretty literally. Thank you for being there. That guy, wherever he is, I don't know what side of the screen he's going
to
be
on. It's hard to tell. I'm
that
jumping
guy
around.
Is Tom. I am Don. And we're going to continue for as long as we're able, which probably isn't much longer, talking real money.
We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only.
Providing personalized financial planning or investing advice takes time, so please consult with a really good fee-only fiduciary investment, tax, or legal advisor. We know a good one. Investing must always involve risk. In other words, you can and probably will lose money at times.
Also, as much as you want it, no one can accurately and consistently predict the future.
So past performance doesn't tell you a darn thing about what the future will bring.
Unlike many other programs that say something similar, Talking Real Money is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities.
Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Appella Capital, a fee-only registered investment advisor.
Thanks for listening, and please visit talkingrealmoney.com for more information and disclosures.
Are we done now?